Is episodes once a week not enough for you, or are you looking for more technical information from the Mixing Music Podcast? Well, guess what? Now you can. You can subscribe to our exclusive content and triple the amount of episodes that you get access to. That's right. Instead of the free once a week episodes, you get 3 episodes a week for only $4 a month or $40 a year. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to those episodes now. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, luxurious Lou.
I'm not going to lie, I do love my luxurious things. I am a luxury boy.
Okay, sure. And with us, for the first time, our special friends and guests to the pod, we have Shane and Will from That Sounds About Right, the podcast, as well as from TikTok, Instagram, Shane Lance, Greasy Will. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming.
What's up, guys?
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Special friend, that's the ultimate honor. When I was in junior high, I wasn't allowed to have a girlfriend, conservative Christian parents, and they called my girlfriend my special friend. So I don't know that you could use a term that is more endearing. You know what I mean? We're your special friends. Are you kidding me?
Oh my
God. It's like, we're special friends.
Oh my goodness. No,
hey,
I have.
Hey, it's 2024 and I accept it.
Yeah, I'm honored to be your special friend.
Yeah.
We're happy to be here. We love you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right, a little bit of background stuff to build some credibility here. Greasy Will. Will is an engineer at East West Studios. And if you're a composer or producer and you've used string patches or horn patches of any kind, you've probably heard of East West Studios. It is that. It is the place where also Frank Sinatra recorded, famous for that, right in the middle of LA. Beautiful studio. You gave us a tour the other day when we were at your live recording. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you both are, Greasy, you are awesome on TikTok for speaking on the nuance of things from a very experienced professional perspective. Like, you're not talking about the 9/11 towers as like a veterinarian. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not, like, you're
talking. I think especially with the era of social media, you know, it is really important. Like, I like to just be very straightforward because I think a lot of people, you know, Crystal Araujo is not on TikTok, you know, like Crystal Araujo and Manny Mariquin aren't on TikTok. So it's like, I'm about as professional as you can get. I probably got the most Grammys of anybody on TikTok. So, like, you know, it's
and
like...
And that was the next thing I was going to say is congrats on the sweep with Killer Mike at the Grammys.
Yeah, thank you. It was unexpected, but very much appreciated for this year. So,
That's, you know, a big congratulations
again,
to you.
I do the same things I talk about, you know, whenever I'm on TikTok saying, like, I think this is the way to do things. It's because I do it that way. And then whenever it gets proven that that's the right way, I get to, like, sit here with my trophy and be like, yeah, see, guys, I told y'all this is how to do it. So,
hell yeah.
You guys got to make your own rendition of Bob and Eric's video of where it's like, no, it should be like this. No, it should be like that. It's like, what makes you the authority? Slams down the Grammy.
Yeah. I was thinking about, because it takes a while to get it. It's supposed to come in the mail this month or whatever. But when I get it, I was thinking about how hilarious it would be to just, like, take it with me everywhere. And just, like, like, literally.
Like a little chihuahua.
Yeah, but not just like on like sessions, because that's a great way to win an argument on a session, but also like to like McDonald's, you know, like just set it on the counter, like double cheeseburger, no pickles, no mustard. Like, yeah, I'm sure that's the way it needs to be.
If I can do it, so can you.
Yeah. There's this really hilarious scene from The Simpsons where Homer wins a Grammy from one of the episodes prior with like the B sharps and stuff. And then he's got a Grammy on his mantle and somebody's like, oh, you have a Grammy? He's like, oh, they just give those to anybody.
That's I do remember that episode. And I also want to introduce Shane. I personally have known Shane a little bit longer. Shane, we met from a group mastermind. Okay.
That's right. It's been a while.
If you've ever read, what book is that? It was the Carnegie. It was Influence. No, it was something about making money. Some book. It's the idea is from a book about making money. And it was like this mastermind group idea. So
did you guys go to a Rich Dad, Poor Dad conference?
Is that yeah, dude, that's what it was.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
No. And we kind of did this like on Discord. Every week we met up and we were talking. Sendai Mike put it together. And it was like the three of us.
Shout out Mike.
And no, there was a fourth person. Yeah,
there was four.
There's four of us. And we were talking about, you and Mike were always talking about running, which is a big influence of why I got into it. Actually, one of the major
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Nice.
And yeah, I got really jealous and felt really inferior. So
congratulations, your social pressure worked.
Yeah, and then, but honestly, so I've known you a lot longer. You were in the Pacific Northwest, and you came out here. You were at a studio. You were doing well, and you took the risk and came out here. And so you're still, compared to Will, you're like fairly new to LA, but we're doing it. You're also on TikTok as an influencer, and your style is more in the sense of empowerment, where it's like Will is like, here's the truth, and then Shane's like, here's how you can use that to empower you, kind of deal. And of course, you both kind of do both.
I like that. Yeah,
you kind of both kind of do both. But I think there's a reason why both of y'all are so popular to the general public, not just among engineers, but to the general public within the audio community, because I think both of those things are much needed and very practical to those trying to grow a career or to emotionally invest into this as a hobby, you know, figure things out. So thank you so much for joining us on the show. I just wanted to do a proper introduction before we get started. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
The first thing I want to talk about, because today's episode, I'm just trying to get I want all of us to be in tears from just like, and calling each other names, like just fighting each other.
you don't even got to yell at me for that to be the case.
But the first thing, we're going to start real easy. Shane and Will, what really makes quality records?
Said this was going to be easy. I don't think there's a more ambiguous, ominous question than that.
Well, let's start with this. What is not crucial to make quality records?
Man, I from my own experience, like, you know, I do think, I say this all the time, and I know Shane says this too, so it's definitely a thing, but, you know, it's not the gear, it's not the studio, it's really just, I mean, because there's some kid right now in FL Studio in like Tallahassee, Florida, making a beat for the first time. And he's going to just tenaciously hit up rappers in their DMs all over the place. And eventually he is going to get a placement with that one beat that he made entirely out of splice loops, you know, and it's going to be like on a number one song in the country. So, you know, as much as I want to, as somebody who is a lover of gear, man, I love gear. I love good stuff. I love nice stuff.
Yeah.
I love having good equipment. Like I joke all the time that I got $100,000 in synths in the next room right now. You know, it's like, I have so much stuff. I've spent so much money on gear in my life, but it's never been the thing that made a hit, you know, not one time. And it never will be. Like it's the same too. Like, especially when it comes to engineering, you know, it's like I have great stuff, but I also have been in my bedroom with, you know, a AT2020 and a Focusrite. And I love some of that stuff even more than stuff I'm making right now. So it certainly isn't the gear that makes the records ever, but it does make the records easier to make sometimes, you know?
So it's a practical thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Shane?
I'll just say, and this, again, this is, you're asking, again, a very big, almost spiritual question, so I'm going to give an answer like that. I'm sorry, it's not going to be very practical, but to me, and I mean this, I'm really trying to distill it down to a solid answer, but it's like an ability to curate a vibe, to like capture an emotion, to say, this is what I'm feeling, and then to put it into a record in a way that other people can then absorb and like enter into that emotion or into that world that you've created themselves. And that can be done at a really high quality or at a really low quality. That is why, it could, because what he's saying, I fully agree with, but it doesn't negate the importance or the possible usefulness of high quality gear. It just means it's not the point. It's not the point. And that's why you can have records. And I think we're probably getting ahead of ourselves in our take. So I'll try to hold back a little bit, but you can have records made on the highest of quality gear and they can just be so lame because they didn't capture a vibe or an emotion. It was just all about the gear. And sure, everything technically sounds great, but it doesn't make me feel anything.
I've told this story before, and it's like one of my favorite moments that I've ever had in a studio, because it was the moment that changed everything for me, like literally changed everything. Because prior to that moment, you know, coming up at East West, like for everybody that doesn't know my story, like I was in bands, like, but metal bands, like, you know, where like I played a sound gear 5-string, you know, it's like, it's not like I was like, we were technical metal, but we weren't like, you know, we weren't like high prestige instrument metal or anything, you know? And then I went to school to be an engineer. So the first time I recorded anything was at Crass whenever I was going to school. And then 9 months later, I graduated from that school and went straight to East West. So I had no time to like appreciate or learn about all these like things. Like, you know, I remember when the tour guy for like the school was giving me a tour of the school and everything. And he was like, yeah, and in this room we have an SSL. And I was like, you're just saying letters, man. I don't know what those are, you know? And then I got dropped into East West, a place where every console in the building is a one of six, like ever made or in existence studio. Like they have an 8028 in one room, a Neve 8078 in the other room, and a Trident A range in the third. It's like, you can't have all three of those consoles at all, much less in one building. So I immediately went into like this super high prestigious gear place where it was like everything that is here is the best you've ever seen. There's a Fairchild in every single studio in that room, in that building. And I was on this session one time and we didn't have the Fairchild in the room that day. It was getting fixed, you know? And somebody came in and they were like, the Fairchild's not in here. Like, oh man, like I specifically wanted the Fairchild. Like they went in this whole like, oh, there's no Fairchild. How am I? And my brain just clicked that day. This was like a couple of years into working. And I was like, oh, do you need that to be good?
And oh, you need a Fairchild?
Please tell me you said that.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Said it out loud and everything. My brain doesn't allow me to filter anything ever. Like I have never had that. And at that moment, that was it. That was the moment in my career where I realized like I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to be that guy who walks into a studio with an 8028 and 7 1176s and LA2As and like one of a kind Altec compressors and be like, oh, but there's no Fairchild. Like, how am I going to work? You know, it's like, so that was, and that became my phrase. Anytime somebody came in and they'd be like, oh, you don't have a Neumann. You don't have like a 67. I'll be like, oh, is that what makes you good? Is a 67? That's what it does. That's what a 67 does, is it just makes any talentless hack good at doing their job. Like, no, you know, at the end of the day, I am the thing that makes an artist good. The microphone is just a tool that I can use successfully or unsuccessfully. The interface, I do realize I'm saying this with literally a $10,000 synthesizer sitting beside me, a 500 series rack of Neves and like that. But at the same time, they're just tools. Everything is just a tool. And it is only it's the old saying, it's the carpenter, not the tool, you know?
Also, it is a tool to pay less taxes at the end of the year.
Yes, it is definitely.
Yeah. No, we've definitely agreed with all that before, because one thing I like to say a lot of times is that it's a poor workman that blames the tools.
Yeah, all the time.
You know, because you hear people saying like, oh, you know, the guitars sound like shit. My bad. I didn't have a Beta 57. I just had a regular 57. Yeah. It's like, no, it's just your ear sucks. How about that?
Something, yeah. Something I'll say yeah. is tools can make things better. They cannot make them yeah. good. And I think a lot of people get into gear thinking like, oh, this will be the barrier of entry into good. When, like we've just determined, it's just a part of making the process better. It's like anything. It's just like learning theory. I tell that to people who wrestle with whether or not they should learn theory or not. It's like, okay, you probably should, but it's not going to make you good. It'll just make you better. So if yeah. you're good, it'll make your process better, but it's not going to turn shit into something magical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that's on my mind, just to, because there's something else that I want to bring up right after this. But the thing that comes to my mind is like those that do really difficult things and can accomplish really difficult things, it's almost always not an ability difference, but it's like a mental difference. And like, I'm thinking about like, if I have to go through this thing, like getting a hit record is this like really ambiguous. There's no right way to do it. It's this non-tangible
or clear
thing.
Path.
Yeah, yeah, and so it's like, it's very easy. In fact, it's so much more cognitively easier to just say it's because they have the tools. It's because they, but and it's really hard to do the difficult work to say, it's my power. It's just constantly rolling the dice and seeing if we can get the right bet, right? And, yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking about. It's like, it's usually that mindset that stops us, and it's not a good mindset to start blaming tools. Like it's very disempowering.
Yeah.
And this is the next topic I want to go into a little bit here is, and I think that this kind of relates to this, maybe not immediately, but I think we can kind of turn it into something that relates. An A&R that I was speaking to recently, he was in an interview, and in the interview, he kind of almost in a tone of admittance, like just admitting something. He said, I think the question was like, what makes an A&R successful? And he said something along the lines of, at the end of the day, it's just kind of like hustle culture. He's like, if I look like I'm working really, and he didn't speak much more past that. It was like literally one yeah. sentence. Like, if I just, I like look like I'm working hard and that gives me credibility.
Wow.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, the music business is a funny thing, isn't it? You know, like there are a lot of that, you know, especially like with the internet now, it's like a lot of people are, you know, just dropping videos on social media constantly. And it's like, you know, one of the reasons I got into TikTok at all and made it on TikTok and actually got like success was because I just showed up and started like going at those guys who are like the five tip guys and like the one thing producers don't want you to know guys and stuff like that.
Oh,
it's like yeah. those guys are putting out dozens of videos a week, you know, like just cranking out videos and talking and talking and talking. And there's not a lot of like they're successful at making videos. Now, like, is the information good or not? On TikTok, it wasn't particularly good. You know, like a lot of those guys that were going off and like talking about all the stuff that they're, you know, like that you have to do as an engineer or you have to do on your next song, or you have to do this. This is the one trick you're missing. It's like, you know, like they're good at making videos. That's what they're good at. But are they any good at engineering? Probably not if they actually do believe that there's one trick that's making you good, you know? If there's one thing that's making you stand out from the crowd. I think sometimes you get these little tips from the internet and it becomes this like, oh, that this kind of relates back to the last thing too. It's like, oh, I need this plugin to do this thing that this guy says I need to do. But in reality, like for me personally, I'd say like probably 95% of those videos I watch and I'm like, I've never done that in my entire career and I am winning Grammys. So like, who is out there sidechaining every single bass? Who is doing that in their mixes? I don't know. I don't know who that is. I've never met anybody in the professional side of things who's sidechaining basses. So if you're getting the tips that this is the one thing you need to do, you know, the credibility behind all those things really comes into question on that shit, you know?
I think I'm understanding the angle from which you're asking the question, but I'll add to that. I think especially outwardly, like on the internet, just like you talked about hustle culture. It can be advantageous to look busy, to look like you're hustling, to look like you have things going on, to speak with authority. All of those things just add up to seeming to validity, to people looking at you and assuming you know what you're doing and you're doing the right things, and then maybe then wanting to work with you. So we could speak to that, and I could speak to that in more detail. But sure, like I understand that there is a bit of a facade to like making sure that you seem like you have some authority. What I'll say though, to me, that facade in music is like one layer thick, for better or for worse. Meaning, and again, I don't know if you had a certain angle in mind, but what I interpret is like, okay, yeah, whether you're actually working or pretending to work or just projecting hustle culture, it's one layer deep, because if someone wants to work with you, as soon as they hear the music you're making, it either is or is not good. You either are or are not making good music. And so to me, I don't think this is where you were going, but I'll go where I think I've heard a lot of people take it. And it's this like, well, I don't want to do, I'm touching on a little bit of what we discussed before, so you can rein me in if you need to, but like, I don't want to do videos as a professional because I don't want to seem or dip my toes into influencing. I don't want to just be the video guy. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's if you're making good music, then that's really all that matters at the end of the day. If putting, you know, the facade forward or putting out your voice or what you're doing in video form is attracting people to you, and as long as they're going to hear music behind you on your playlist that's good music, then it's really you are just presenting something to pull people into your work. And if you're making good music, then it validates itself. So I don't, again, you can tell us if you had another thought.
Well, that question was meant to be open-ended because I wanted to see where y'all think. I mean, that could have gone in so many directions, in the sense of like, looking busy brings more work. And that is true, I feel like, a lot of the times. Like, trying to give discounts and basically telling everybody, I'm not busy at all, is not a really good look. There's
I was just gonna say that is actually something like Shane and I talked about this before, but I don't answer text messages or emails immediately whenever people hit me, because I am usually busy, but legitimately, like, I just don't want to give people that kind of like immediate response so that they expect that I will always give an immediate response. You know, like, I want people to have that moment of like, oh, he's pretty busy. Like, you know, he's doing a lot of stuff. He's not just going to answer every text message I send. So, but that's mostly like my family, not clients.
I was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Is to keep
set
his family at arm's length.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I built this huge, I won a Grammy really just in an attempt to make
distance
sure my family
myself,
knew I was busy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I was just trying to
so
be
my
busy
brother stops
to stay away
me
from my family, and I accidentally won a Grammy. No, it could go into multiple things, but what you're saying, I fully agree with. I do think there's validity to outwardly presenting your process, seeming busy, seeming authoritative, speaking out things. And it does, like you said, it attracts business versus, I know so many guys, and I mean this as a compliment to these guys or gals, so many people doing great work in secret who would think, this is where there's like this inverse effect. To them, it's like this holier than thou. They don't want to lower themselves to the level of the internet and have to put their process out there. The irony to that is they have great gear. They're making great music. Let's assume in this circumstance I'm setting up that they're actually really good. But because they are unwilling to lower themselves down to grovel before the internet a bit, that's the wrong way to put it, but you know, like to get down on the level of the people, they have no work. And so there is, I hate to say it, but to that, like, would you say grind culture, you know, putting up the facade, you do have to put it out in front of people somehow, some way.
Yeah, I think, and my beginning point was kind of like the corollary to that, which is that like, there is people that are nonstop on the internet doing absolutely nothing. You know, like those guys are making
100%
no music whatsoever. They are putting videos out constantly on how to do this job, on how to be an engineer on how to make good songs, on how, but have done absolutely nothing. Yeah. Meanwhile, there's guys that are, like Shane said, just constantly grinding and not talking about it at all. So there's like kind of like a middle ground too for this stuff.
So mm-hmm. the constant advice that even myself and we all give is the benefits of utilizing the internet in order to gain work and to earn trust. So
yes.
Yeah, those that want to use the internet, that know that they should use the internet in order to build a business. Like they're at the beginning of their career and they're self-aware enough to know that they're not experts on these things. How can they utilize the internet in order to build enough confidence in order to be given the chance to grow? Because obviously they can't. You're saying that nobody should just be like, you should do this every single time with your vocal EQ. But is there an approach to the internet that you can do that can maintain credibility and build trust and get all the benefits of it without looking like a jackass?
I think people have to find their own voice. I know this isn't what you're asking, but to be clear, none of the four of us could prescribe someone the kind of content they should make, right? You have to discover your own voice, just as you guys have your podcast angle. We have ours. We make certain kinds of content, all of us. What I will say is, why wouldn't you? To what you just said, it's such a valuable tool that unless you have a good reason not to, or really truly just feel like it goes against who you are or who you want to present as, I just don't know why you wouldn't. It's a low hanging fruit. It's a way to connect with community. I spent, speaking of being an influencer, I'm almost like ironically, because and no one meant it as an insult, but that word like has a, you know, it feels dirty.
It feels
to me.
Dirty sometimes. Yeah.
But, right. But I will say, I almost take it as a compliment. We've joked about this, but I'm like, I had a career. I worked for 13 years full time in music before I had any social media whatsoever. So to me, I think a lot of people outwardly, if that's all they know of me, they might even be like, yeah, he is just, not that you're saying it that way, but I'm saying outwardly, it could seem to anyone who's doing social media, Will or I, if they don't have context for what we actually do, that could be the case. Like, oh, they're just influencing. I'm like, I'm honored by that because I did it without for so long that I'm like, if it's working enough that I'm perceived that way, then it must be working. So point is though, I think I can't prescribe to people how, you know, what they should do. They have to figure out a way to interact with the community, present their process or their thoughts in a way that are engaging and pull people in, attract those people to either their work and or themselves. But what I can't say, again, why wouldn't you? For me, though, the rule, this is what I'm getting to. The rule for myself personally is the music I'm making has to be better than the content I'm making about music. And I think if people keep that balance in order, then they'll be just fine. I never feel, we've talked about this a lot. I don't post that often, but we both post multiple times a week, at least.
Definitely.
I never feel nervous about being perceived. Everything I just said, I said that for a reason. It's not just me being self-congratulatory or not just being defensive. I said it to say this. I never feel insecure about how much or how little I post because the music I'm making is so good that the content is just like, it's just extra. It's just on top. It's just getting myself out there.
And I suggest people clarify. Do the same. Sorry, I want to clarify one thing as you continue to move forward. To make feel like you have good music, since we were talking about gear, it may be just a time effort thing. Like you've spent time. Do you think that would be the case?
You're saying time on a specific project or time over your career getting better? How do you mean?
Like if you spend more time trying to make your content better versus more time trying to make your music better, like that balance.
I think that it can be that. That's a good way to distill it down to like a practical, quantifiable thing. We both know though, sometimes people kill it. They can make great songs really quickly, right? And then maybe they, on any given week or any given day, accidentally spend more time on content. Not that this is what you're asking, but just for the sake of transparency, that isn't the case for either of us, I'm certain.
Yeah,
but I think you just have to keep that balance in order. And you could even, this isn't what you're asking, but like, I realize good music is subjective. It's a bit arbitrary. What do I mean by that? The listener, I'm going to just assume some intelligence. You know what I mean? Make music that you feel good about, that works for your clientele, for your people. That's like the bar. And then you can make whatever you want as far as content, because then it's like, to put it really plainly and almost in a vain, way, it's like, that's your authenticity card. It's like you do whatever you want in content with your pod. You guys are doing a podcast. This is the same thing as posting on TikTok. We're all doing content right now, right? What gets us into the club of like legitimate engineer, legitimate producer is we get to point to our music. I can do anything I want on the internet as far as content, because I can point to my music and say it's good. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to echo that, because that's, I mean, I don't spend any time on content. My phone comes out when I think a thought and I say that thought, and then yeah, I put my phone down and I go back to doing my job. You know, it's like, and I think that content, you know, this was something I brought up recently with like the James Blake thing, because he, you know, he made this statement recently about how basically his point was that, you know, artists shouldn't have to do the song and dance of social media. They should be able to just make music, right? And I was like, you're looking at this all wrong. It's like, you don't have to do TikTok. You get to do TikTok. You get a free promotion platform for your stuff to bring people into your world. And all you have to do is capitalize on that thing. All you have to do is say, like, okay, cool, I'm just gonna like do this thing, and I will bring in new people that want to hear what I have to say or listen to the things that I do, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, that is all it's ever been. Like, TikTok and Instagram and all the social media stuff that I've done have just been advertising for people to understand. And it has eliminated 99% of my problematic clients, because most people that come to me now have followed me or heard of me from the internet, and they know what to expect. They know I'm going to be a no bullshit person. So I don't have to pretend to be like, you know, like, especially, you know, back in the early days of East West, I'd be doing like string sessions for Disney or something. And I'd be like dressing all up and like wearing a button up shirt and shit, you know? And it's like, no, I'm Greasy Will. Like, you're going to walk into the studio. I am going to look tired because I am tired. I'm going to look hungover because I am hungover. But we're going to get the job done.
Is that Vaseline all over your body, dude? Is that Vaseline? You look shined. Yeah, no, for real.
No, it's like I got to give people a look into who I am as a person. And that look into who I am as a person is just advertising for my services. My engineering is just like that. I had a friend come to me for the very first time to like actually work with me to do a project. And he'd never worked with any other engineer, but he was like a big, you know, he's a musician and he was always doing stuff. And we went into East West to record and we're doing this project, and there were so many times where he was shocked at the fact that, you know, like I'd be like, yeah, you know, there's a 57 up, who cares? Or like, yeah, there's a mic there, just use the one that's there. And he's like, you're not like being very scientific and specific and doing it. And I was like, no, it's a feel thing. Like, this is all like, obviously I'm doing this by feel, and everything is like, It's feel, it's just vibes. It's, I'm just operating off of knowledge that I have from doing this a billion times, and a feel. And he was so shocked that I was just like there was a one time where we were having an issue with the bass for this song, because it was going through a DI and then into the amp, but the DI wasn't feeding the amp properly, and we kept getting these weird like buzzes and bullshit no matter what we did. Swapped out all this stuff. I did it like 5 minutes max of troubleshooting. And I was like, screw it, we'll just take the DI. Who cares about the amp? And I moved on with my day. And that blew his mind that I was willing to just walk away from the amp so fast. But I thought that was just common sense, because it's like, well, I can always reamp it if it's an issue later. I want the vibe of the session to keep going, and that is not going to hold up my session. So it's like, I'm just gonna go with it. I'm just gonna do it. And people that follow me and see me on the internet know that about me. They know that I'm that type of person that is more like concerned about getting the song feeling good than I am about like all the little, you know, banal bullshit that goes along with engineering all the time. And that's why my stuff is so good, is because I don't bullshit around with stuff, you know? I've definitely met that engineers who can easily spend a whole day setting up drum mics, you know? I spend no more than 10 minutes setting up drum mics. Yeah. <Wow. laughs>
Yeah. You know, that does remind me of like when we had in the mix, part of my training regimen for anybody that was hired from the start. Like, one, I had a culture training, which is like, if a celebrity comes through, don't be a fanboy, don't be a dick. Like, they came here to work, you should be here to work. But the other part of it was like, it doesn't matter how good of an engineer you are if you kill the vibe.
So true. I love that you were speaking to that stuff right up front. That's brilliant.
Yeah, for me, SDK, I gave him the training too when we first started working together because I wanted to make sure even my partner knew it.
Right. Hey, dude, I couldn't do it. Like, knowing all the training, when I met Lewis Cole at the Grammys, I don't even know if y'all know who that is. He's a jazz guy. He's a funky jazz dude. I met Lewis Cole. He's probably got like, he's got less followers than both of y'all. Okay. And he got freaked out.
My favorite moment in the mix was, what is Miley's sister? Noah Cyrus?
Yeah. Noah.
We had
both know that, Kirk, but not
Noah
Lewis
and everybody
Cole.
Come through the studio.
Forgive us, Lewis.
And I had just talked to DK because we had just opened the studio. It was our first set of celebrities to come through the door. I'm like, hey, just a quick breakdown. This is how I typically handle things. I want to make sure that they're comfortable. So let's avoid this, that, blah, blah. As soon as they get into the studio, as the door is closing, he's like, hey, was that Noah? And I'm like, DK, shush. Like, no pointing out who they are. They know who they are.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it was much more innocent than that and stuff like that. But I feel like it's part of that. Like, you can know as much as you can. When DK and I met, I was the personal engineer to a really well-known female artist and everything. And she always kind of had these higher standards, always brought around big name producers and everything that would like to work a certain way. But you always knew if something about the vibe changed, the whole session would change. And
sure,
you could tell a shift in the air. And that was the most important thing to preserve. And when you're capturing a performance, you're capturing just that. You're not just capturing the frequency response. You're capturing the artist, that moment, that vibe.
Certainly.
And if you lose it, you're not going to get it back tomorrow or the next day. That's why a lot of writers, once they work on one song and they no longer feel the vibe of the song, they just move on to the next one.
Sure. Yeah. I love that, Lou. That's so true. I think you said it best, but there are plenty of engineers out there who are very technically proficient, maybe even incredibly creative. But if they're killing vibes, it just doesn't work. And we're all engineers at heart. We do multiple things. I know the focus here is engineering, but we songwrite and produce and do other things too. And I know you guys do as well. But the focus is engineering. So I can say this, I'm qualified by being an engineer myself, but engineers in this field are the most at risk, I think, of being vibe killers. Purely based on nerdiness. Like we are the most, if there's a pie chart, like we're the closest to accidentally being Best Buy employees if you're not careful. And so we've had whole episodes bullshitting about how you just got to be a decent hang. You got to be able to read the room. So we can move on, but I love that. It's so true.
Yeah, I think 100%, like just to tack on to that, I have seen so many people fail in this industry from, you know, because working at East West, there is a constant supply of runners coming through. And I would say less than 5% of those runners ever move up to even get into the rooms as an assistant. And it is because purely the management has no idea. If you think of about a manager at a studio, right? They have no idea if you are technically good, because they're never going to be they're in the office.
Yeah,
they're not in the studio. They have no idea if you are any good. All they know is, are you cool or are you the worst person to be in a room with for 12 hours?
Did or did not the session like you?
Yes, yes. And that's it. That's all they know, you know?
What's that show, What We Do in the Shadows? Are you the energy vampire? Or
yeah, exactly.
I don't know that, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually a good reference. Anyway, I like that. Yeah, at the end of the day, in the perspective of a studio manager, that is all you would know. That was funny, dude. At the end of In the Mix, it just ended up being I ended up finding myself being a manager of a bunch of 20-year-olds, and that was tough.
Yeah. Like,
it's about 5% that stand out, maybe, if that.
Yeah, definitely. And realistically, like and of those 5%, you know, I can look around at who I know from East West. East West is the pinnacle of studios, in my opinion. It is up there with Abbey Road and, you know, and maybe like Sunset Sound or whatever, as being like the best studios in the entire world. I could talk about 14 years being in that building and working around that building and everything. And in 14 years, I could count maybe on, I might get to two hands the amount of engineers who have then graduated out of even assistant positions and then gone on to succeed as engineers. It is a pretty rare thing, which actually leads us to.
Oh, okay. You want to go to the next point?
Yeah, we might as well.
Yeah, might as well.
DK's got something.
I was going to ask, before we do,
yeah,
Will, I actually wanted to ask you specifically within your realm, Will. My question to that is, do you find that the people that do well, like the 5%, is it a genetic personality thing that's like you're just that person or you're not? Or do you find that it is like a discipline people choose to let go? Like there's some level of choice involved.
I think it is a hard combination of both. You know, it's like, you know, when you talk to, so Andrew Masters and I came up together. For anybody in the internet space, a lot of people probably know him. He does.
Speaking of real influencers.
He does studio tours and everything on YouTube. But we came up together. We started literally like 3 days from each other, you know, like, I started right before him, and then a couple days later, he started. And in those first couple of years, when we were working in the studio together as like runners and assistants and everything, I didn't spend much time as a runner. I got promoted to assistant almost immediately after getting to East West. But in those first couple of years, Andrew and I spent... I mean, literally thousands of hours. Like, I think I calculated that I hit like 10,000 hours in like 2.5 years or something like that. We were doing every single day when we got done doing whatever our shift was, whatever our gig was for that day. We then spent another 4 to 6 hours in the studio. So we'd work an 8 hour or 10 hour day and then spend 4 or 6 more hours in the studio setting up drums and trying stuff, moving stuff around, checking stuff out, like whatever. Andrew and I lived in the studio. And at that exact same time, there was many other runners and assistants that came through the building that got done. And then they went out on a date, or they went and like went to the bar to hang out with their friends, or they did LA stuff. It's LA. You're in LA. You're in the like one of the biggest cities in the world. There's lots of stuff to do. And we did not do any of that because we were trying to be the best all the time. Like, we lived and breathed being the best engineers that could ever exist. And so there was plenty of distractions. We forced ourselves to do that. But in a way, too, we both had it in us to want to do that in the first place. And that goes all the way back to when you're a little kid and you hear that saying for the first time, like, oh, when you... You know, if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life. I've been working my ass off this week, but somehow been the happiest person in the world. You know, even doing construction. I didn't get into this to be a construction worker. I'm not a carpenter, but I'm building stuff all week long and I'm enjoying it because I know what it means when I finish and I can put up all this studio stuff and be ready to go. And that's like... I literally have been doing like 14 and 16 hour days all week. My girlfriend is so pissed off at me because I have nonstop coming home at 2 a.m. and then leaving at 9 a.m. the next day, like no time whatsoever. And I'm still so happy. I still don't feel like I'm really working, you know, like working is whenever you're like forcing yourself to do something. And I have not been doing that at all. I want to do this. And it's, so to answer the question, it is discipline, but it's also some sort of weird inherent genetic thing that makes me want to do this so that it isn't discipline at all.
No, I have a question. This is more of a come up in the commercial studio world, because my history has always been... I give more than I ask for. In fact, I have a stupid complex of feeling guilty if I even ask for anything, which makes me just work harder for things that I want, right?
Yeah.
But With that said, I never came up on the commercial studio side. I've worked out of many commercial studios and met owners. And because of that, I've been given gigs at those studios. But I was never inherently like technically a staff. I was more like a side hire that was just the regular guy that came in with other clients all the time, right? But I, with that, I could choose my own boundaries. I can choose my own clients. I can choose what sessions I want to take on and what I can't. When coming up at East West or commercial studios of that nature, if you were to try to set those up early on, even as an assistant, like, oh, I just try not to work past this time, how detrimental was that for those 5% that ever
made it? There's no saying no to anything.
I'll chime in.
That's what I thought. That's what I wanted to clarify.
Yeah, we've done whole episodes on this, and I wasn't at East West, but I did come up and spend 12, 13 years in a big commercial space in Seattle, very similar to Will. And for me, you, in those early years, you almost have to be willing to say yes to like the 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. hours.
Yeah.
I know this
yeah.
isn't just specific to time. That's just one example of something that you should probably be flexible. That's what you're getting at, flexible to do. But
yeah.
But 100%, I think the early part of my career was built on the back of being willing to say yes to track this random rapper who came in from Atlanta at 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. the next morning, or this country band of old men who could only record after 8 p.m. and the owner just literally didn't want to do it because I was young and stupid enough to do it. I certainly wasn't good, but I was available.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
he let me do it. Yeah. So yeah, I think you almost, I don't know that there's some bylaw, I don't know if there was at East West. There certainly was no spoken or written agreement early in my career that if I didn't say yes, that probably wouldn't even be legal, that I would be let go. But I can tell you it was in the air and it was in the water, and you better be willing to say yes early on, or you're going to miss out on a ton of opportunities, and there will be some other random kid or whatever, who will be willing to say yes.
My first
I feel like
year,
that's pretty culture.
My first year at East West, or first actually 2 years, I was doing about 335, 340 days out of the year working.
Yeah,
and I was I found out later. I didn't know this at the time, but it felt like it. But I found out later that. One of the reasons I was doing all that time and working so much is that anytime they thought they had a problematic client that was going to be a bit of an issue, they threw me on that session. Wow. And anytime they had like a tough one that was going to be hard, they put me on that session specifically because they were like, dude, this guy is just battle hardened and will absolutely go the distance on every single. There was one time I'll never forget it because it shaped who I was as a person. I did like a 36-hour day recording because I had a long session that was supposed to, it was scheduled long. It was supposed to be like 14 hours or something like that. And then we went over and kept working until we got to about, and then I had an early start the next day. So I ended up late nighting into an early start into a long day. And then I had planned to go to another session right after that. So I essentially came in, pulled a full 24 hours, and then had to go to another session and ended up into like the 36-hour range. And I don't even know how I did it at the time, like because it wasn't, there wasn't any amphetamines involved or anything. We didn't have Adderall access like that back then. But I was grinding and like, everybody knew that that's who I was. And now it's a bit like I am, like when I say like battle hardened, like I really feel like a journeyman. I feel like the guy who put in his hours on every single type of session, every single long night, every single like young chop just called and wants to get into the studio and it's 2 a.m. and he's literally falling asleep in the chair while he's working and I'm the engineer so I can't go to sleep, but I can sit and watch him sleep for 2 hours, you know? So it's like, and I've done them all. I've just grinded through it and I know for a fact that not only is it what still gets me calls from East West, but a lot of those people that wouldn't take those gigs or like backed off didn't even get offered any of it afterwards. Like it starts to, you know, it's just like, you know, studio managers don't mean to be this way. Like, I know they want to respect people's boundaries and be understanding and everything, but it's just a fact that whenever you know you've got a tough one, you look to the person that you know will do it and execute it. And if you have somebody that, you know, complains about things and doesn't want to like do the weekend thing or has to get up and do like the kids stuff at 9 a.m. so they won't work late or whatever, you just can't, you can't put them in that situation. So it reduces the amount of times you can put them in more situations.
I'll add, because at the beginning, DK, we talked about like distilling it to practical advice. You said a lot of the listeners are upcoming engineers, right? So obviously of this is so valuable. A piece of advice I'll give is not only be available to say yes, but just be around. I remember early on at the studio I came up in, even when there weren't things booked, for example, what we're touching on here is like saying yes to the crazy hours, right? That's one side. The other side of that is the engineer or the owner would tell me, look, I actually don't have anything booked for you, but if you just hang around, something's bound to come up. And at the time, that felt difficult, or in my mind, I'm like, God, that's like, so I'm just going to be here and not paid, which by the way, yes, at least for me, that was the case. I still lived at home. So hopefully you're in a life space where you can make that work. But I did that. I just showed up. Even if I wasn't booked at 2 a.m., I was just around the studio. Yep. And the amount of work that found me because I had proven to him and by just practicality was physically present, the amount of work that found me was so much more than had I just waited to be booked or had I just waited until I got a call. So that's the concise advice.
And
just
definitely
be around the studio.
To tag onto that too is an added just a little... studio managers are chaotic, you know, like they have a lot of stuff going on. I still do this. I still pop into East West all the time, even though I'm freelance and have been for years. The reason so many people associate me with East West is because I pop in there all the time just to say hi to Candace and Keith, the managers there. And who do you think is the first person on their mind whenever they get a phone call and they're like, do you know any engineers? Oh, well, Will was just here. Bam. You know, like that's if you are out of sight, you're out of mind, you know, just like they say. But if you are always popping in and always around, you're the first person they think of whenever there is an opportunity. They're like, oh, right. Yeah, of course, him.
Yep.
And as the person, Lou and I, as the people that did the calling to bring the engineer in at the studio. That is, we can, 100%.
Yeah, honestly, I've always told people, like, one of the things that I pride myself early on was being the Minutemen style engineer, which is what we allude to there, which is every call you get is almost a yes. I remember one time running a concert, getting a call at 1 a.m. in the middle of the concert saying, hey, can you go do a G-Eazy session at his house and right after you're done with the concert? And then I had an 8 a.m. with Keisha. So that 36 hour thing, I didn't hit 36 hours, but I definitely hit 19 hours for that day.
Right.
And that's what I always tell people. Like, I was a problem solver, and that's typically what they're looking for. People, you have a tough session that's coming in. You look for the engineer that can solve that problem. Cause the problem isn't the sessions coming in. The problem is that not many people in your docket can actually handle a session of that type.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, okay, so I want to go on to the next thing. There's like two small topics that I want to go into real quick. And this is important. I asked before the show, so context for the listeners here. Before the show, I said, Shane and Will, we need some hot takes. Things that are true, but will open eyes, bring new insight for people. And Will said the brazen remark of the importance and the value of having a hierarchy of engineers. What the fuck does that mean?
I think that there's a place for everybody, right? There is, and some people don't, you know, this is gonna, you know what? I'm just gonna say it. I don't care. I've always said it, so I'm just gonna say it. There's a reason you are in Topeka, Kansas, and you might be a good engineer, but there is a level to this game, you know, and there's a reason that the really, really good guys are at the top and the average guys are in the middle and the bottom guys. Now, the reason that that's important or that's, you know, good for the industry, there's supposed to be a hierarchy. There is supposed to be the guys who are the Oppenheimers of the industry, you know, like the best minds that exist. And there's a reason that there's guys, you know, stuck in their hometowns, like doing gigs for $200. And both of them are just as likely to randomly have a number one hit somewhere. You know, it's like, and just like there is a hierarchy of artists where you can be at the top of this number one, you know, like one of the best in the entire world that does it. Or you could be just a dude that does shows in your hometown and like has never really gonna get out of that thing. And that hierarchy is important for both sides of this because artists need a $200 session engineer. You know, there is artists out there that need a mix for $200, you know. There's also artists out there that need a $7,000 mix. And that's why Serban is raking in the dough on those things. You know, there is levels to this and those levels need to exist because if there was only top level and high, you know, paying, then those bottom level artists wouldn't have somebody to work with and somebody to learn from and everything. And similarly, if there wasn't bottom level artists, those starting out engineers wouldn't have somebody that they can fuck up their work all day long and like, you know, do a shitty job on and then look back later and be like, oh my God, I didn't know anything about what I was doing back then. But you still made a little income and you still got to keep doing this job. So I think that the hierarchy of engineering and the hierarchy of like the industry itself is essential because also, what's really cool about that is, especially with today's industry and today's world, those bottom level people, and I see this all the time, and I say that this is one of my biggest competitors in my industry, right? Those bottom level people can shoot to the top at any given moment. This isn't a monarchy. You don't have to like stay in your lane and like only be there. You could be the bottom level guy and then next week, one of those bottom level artists that you work with shot to the top and you go with them. And I've seen it a lot of times. I've seen dudes who have no earthly business being inside a huge studio like East West, have never even touched a console before, much less a one of three Neve console that exists, have no idea how any of this stuff works. But they are an engineer for a top level artist because they were the dude that was with them when they were nobody and they got to go along for the ride. And Eventually, I think that it's cool. It's rad. I'm not putting those people down because everybody starts somewhere. You know, I happened to start at the top. I just walked into the biggest studio in the world and was like, give me a job. And they did, you know, but that doesn't work for everybody. And I lucked into it. I didn't even know you couldn't do that. I didn't know you couldn't just walk into a studio and get a job at like the biggest studio in the world. So there is a reason that it exists. It's important that it exists and it's good for the industry for it to exist. The only thing that I would say about it is if you are a bottom level guy and you recognize that you're a bottom level guy and you don't want to stay a bottom level guy, get better, work, grind, do these things, do every single thing that comes along, work your ass off, fire like a machine gunner down range, just thousands of rounds in the hope that one catches a body down there. You know, it's like, that's what you got to be doing. But I think it's important to exist.
There was an important part of that too is, and I always like to add this, and I'll kind of do an example here. So I'm in charge of like a group of young men at our church, just like 12 to 18 year old boys. And one time we did a lesson where I brought 10 different levels of hot sauce. And the point of the lesson was like, we're all experiencing slowly increasing levels of pain. Like right. You may have slightly more taste buds than this other person. But in general, this is hard for all of us. Yeah. And I do want to point that out too. It's like, yes, like it's not easy to get over like you said, Shane, groveling to the internet. Like that's a hit of pride a little bit. It hurts your pride a little bit. Like, it's not easy to post on social media. It's not easy to do this. It's not easy to move to LA, but it's never been easy. And that is the fence, the barrier to get into doing well into this sort of stuff. And it's like, I also want to take the time to recognize exactly what you said and also point out yes, it's hard. It's supposed to be hard. It's hard for everyone. And I also want to say not being a narcissist, loving yourself isn't always bad, but it is dangerously narcissistic to think that you have it any harder than anyone else.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And sorry,
you know,
just like
you said something great there, and I love when people I love that point because I have people all the time. You know, I'm from Pennsylvania originally. I grew up just outside of Philly, and there was times, even now, like especially when I first started, but even now, people will message me every now and then, you know, from high school or something, you know, and they'll be like, "That's so crazy, man! You live in California. That's so crazy!" Like, I could never do that. Like, why couldn't you do that? We're like, oh, well, my family's all here and I wouldn't have a support system and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I was like, do you think I have family here? Yeah. Like, do you think I'm just like secretly, like my family all came out to LA with me or something? I had to give all that up too. I had to walk away from safety and support. Like my brother, for a good example, my brother lives, my grandfather gave my brother like, I don't know, a couple acres of land or whatever to build a house on right beside his house, you know? And so he got land to build a house on. He got like, you know, help building the house because the family's all around. They could all come in and pitch in and like my grandfather's an electrician, like all this stuff. So it's like, that's what I gave up was like, a house and security and family and being able to like grow up near my kids, grow up near my family and have somebody to watch them whenever I need somebody and like all this stuff. I walked away from that and I had to, you know, when my car broke down on the freeway or whatever, when I was just getting started out, I had to just push that bitch off the freeway. There was no call up dad and have him come help you out and like get the tow truck and use his AAA card so that, you know, you get the free 5-mile tow or whatever. There was none of that. It was do it yourself and survive. It was, you know, if I had to move into my apartment, you know, by myself, I moved into my apartment by myself. You know, it was like, I had to just like, oh, I guess that couch is staying because I can't lift it. So it's this one's staying here and I'll just have to figure out something from the new place, you know?
You know, so, I like the idea that now you can be like, was it worth it? Grammy, bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is like, you know, to pull a, to, you know, win, play big, win big, you know?
Yeah.
If you play big, you risk it all. And trust me, as someone sitting here with 3 divorces, like I played big. I played big every time and I lost big every time. My best friend always jokes that that I play life on hard mode because like every 5 years I got to start over with half my shit. Yeah. but like, you know, I play big but I win big and that's how life is. Like you got to go for it or don't. And it's fine. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Shane over here has been able to do both. Like he's played big and played safe and also because he has family, he has stuff that he's taken care of and prioritizes that. And he built that into his career as well. But he put that time in at a different time. And we talk about this all the time where he, you know, when he started out, he recognized the same thing I did, which is like, I got nowhere else to be. This is the best time to put this time in. You know, I'm young. I have all this, you know, like I have opportunity right now. So he put his time in a different and then got to the place where he was happy with what he was with on his success and then said, OK, now this is me. I'm building my life here. And this is the family time. And this is what's important to me. I just keep resetting that button every couple of years.
I think saying like, Yeah, I play hard, and my divorces is proof of that. Is the wildest take I've ever.
But you know what? I love the humility and humor behind it, where it's like, listen, I went for it. I believed in it 100% every time, and to me, I can find respect behind that every time.
That's fantastic.
Because I'd rather fall flat on my face than just little trips here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know what? And again, no disrespect to anybody that has put their, you know, family above moving to LA. You know, like it is not for everybody, but this goes back to that hierarchy thing. It isn't for everybody. It's not for everybody to do that, you know? Like Shane happened to hit his like perfect stride to come here during the pandemic, but that meant all sorts of different sacrifices that he's made in different ways. You know, it's like there is lots of ways to skin the cat. I went at it the hardest way you could go at it. Not everybody has to do it the hardest way, you know, but there is always going to be sacrifices. So no disrespect to anybody who has prioritized, like, you know, staying close to family and everything. That's not to call them any less of talented or able. It's just, you know, I did do that. And so I can say, like, this is definitively like the hardest way to do it. I can do it. So I'm satisfied and comfortable with it. But, but I, you know, respect to anybody who does do that, because it's, I mean, Shane gets up every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning and like
says goodnight to Will.
Yeah, and says goodnight to me. But like, I find that to be 1,000 times harder than any of the stuff that I do. The fact that he's like managing a career and a family and doing it successfully, that to me is 1,000 times harder than anything I do, really. You know, it's easy to just kind of at this point in my life be like, yeah, fuck it, whatever. I'm just like, you know, going for it, you know? It's too
late
to turn back.
That's, I feel like Will's view of Chris is the, me and DK had talked about this, like my view of DK, where when me and DK met.
I'm an asshole that gets on the plane first every time.
No. So we've talked about this before where when I came up, I was, like I said, Minutemen style recording. Like you get a call, you're up at 3. I literally remember waking up next to my wife, who at the time was my girlfriend, at 3 a.m. I got a phone call from a producer saying his hard drive crashed and he was at 17 hertz recording. And he's like, bro, I have Ray J in studio right now and we're pitching him music. Like, and my hard drive just stopped working. I'm like, fuck. I look at navigation. I'm like, I'll be there in 20 minutes and, you know, leaving. And she's like, where are you going? Why are you putting on your pants at 3 a.m? I'm like, I got to go. Like, my client
needs me. Why were your pants off at 3 a.m? Don't you get it?
You sleep with jeans on?
No, I'm teasing.
But, you know, I remember prioritizing my career so much that one of the challenges that came up twice in my relationship was, in the most honest and genuine of ways, I was given the opportunity to choose my career over my relationship because she felt that the relationship is what was holding me back from success. And I know that that's a challenge for a lot of people. So when I met DK, you know, he hadn't known these stories yet, but I was seeing a guy who had a kid move to LA. His wife was still in their hometown of Utah, or not necessarily hometown, but that's where, you know, they were most recently at. And I'm also seeing like, okay, he's managing it. It's difficult on his side too, and all this kind of stuff. And I had already agreed to stay in my relationship because, I mean, shit, we just celebrated 13 years. I'm married, like I'm good. But, that to say that, like, I saw when I was given those opportunities where my focus on my career was starting to affect my relationships. And so I know that balancing problem where DK kind of came in, he's like, I have a kid, I have a wife, but I'm still pushing just as hard as I saw myself pushing when I wasn't paying attention. Yeah. You know, so I know that there's a balancing act. You can always calibrate later, which is what I found out. But if your priority is your career, you have to push as hard as you can while you have the opportunity. Kind of like Chris said, he's like, if you have nothing holding you back, if you're out of town and that's the only thing that's holding you back, if your family's in another neighborhood, but you're really trying to grow the career, sometimes you just have to push against the grain.
Yeah.
And in Chris's sense, like, dude, like, you're calibrating, you've got your family still, DK's got his family, and now he's added on 100 miles Chris, to that, you know, training for fucking ultra. Wait,
which one of us is Chris?
Yeah, who's Chris?
Oh, sorry, Shane.
Sorry,
Shane,
oh my God. Shane.
Shane. Shane. I thought you were Chris.
The first time I was like, huh, and then like the third or fourth time I was like, wait, is there somebody else?
I'm only right now Shane, becoming self-aware. So I thought we were referring to someone else. I'll say, I'm glad that all these compliments are for me.
Sorry, my bad.
No, it's okay. I thought someone else was getting accolades.
No, but like, you guys are obviously like doing your thing, and like, you've maintained one of the hardest parts of it, which is doing this while with a family.
Yeah,
sure.
Because even on my end, like, I want to have a kid soon enough, but I find that as part of adding to the challenge of the career.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so. Well, and Shane absolutely knows this, that I am completely envious of his like ability to have a family and like, and prioritize that and do that. Like, it is something, clearly after three failed marriages, I've tried to do this. It is,
it's quite
a
challenge.
I did put the effort in, you know, I just can't, it's not for me apparently, but you know, I just had to, you know, fuck it. This is all I'm good at. Fuck it.
There's one comment I want to make, and then I want to ask one final question, which I may want to edit out depending on how it goes. But I actually specifically wanted to direct it at you, Shane, and it's going to be a leading question. So
it's
forgive
Chris.
Me. Sorry, it's going to be. It's going to be. We're never going to let Shane. Blue live that down.
Oh yeah, sorry, Chris.
Thank you. See, Lou knows me for real.
But it's going to be a leading question. But before I do, I do want to point out the utility of ego in this idea of like, if you truly knew that you couldn't leave because of family obligations, like, mom is at home, I have to take care of her, I really can't leave my house because of the situation. If you knew that 100%, then you would feel no guilt for not being able to go to LA. But if you feel guilt or shame, or you feel like this, I'm not good enough, or this level of superiority complex through a deep level of feeling inferiority, I'm not gonna blanket state this because I don't know any situation, but that may be a good idea to mark that as a compass to show how you feel about yourself and your ego telling you, you know what? If it really came down to it, I could have called a sick day and just done this one thing, but I didn't.
Wow. Yeah.
I use work as an excuse, or I use my mom as an excuse, and whatever it is. So I want to be clear about that. Like, I'm trying to like practically speak on ego and using that as a compass to figure out where you feel.
Sure.
Like, you
I like
yourself.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
The last question that I want to ask, again, the leading question, tough question, really fiery question, but I speak to you, Shane, if I'm not mistaken, you are the son of a pastor. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Did you do seminary? Did you go that far?
No.
Okay,
my wife and I were on staff for music stuff at a church for many years, adjacent to like my producing engineering career and touring in a band, but I never went to Bible school of any kind.
Okay, I'm going to share a quote from a friend, and then I'm going to ask my leading question.
I can only imagine where this is, all this setup.
Okay.
I like this.
Yeah.
My friend is a doctor. He's a PhD, actual medical doctor. And I asked him, how do you feel about the conspiracy theories? About because of capitalism, we actually already have the cure to cancer, but it doesn't make money to cure cancer. So that's why they haven't brought it out. And he said, that is the most disrespectful thing you could ever say about any of my friends that are actually trying to cure cancer.
Right.
Anybody working on it right now is like, they've lost lives and family from cancer, and they're so motivated to find the cure.
Sure.
The fact that you even bring that up is so disrespectful. Now, the leading question is, how do you feel about Americans saying that the music industry is satanic?
Mm. Oh, interesting.
Hail Satan! Woo!
I don't really know. I don't have some deep or premeditated answer, so I hope
so
this
is
fun enough.
Is it? Do you, like, you've been here long enough. Like, you've seen it. You're like with, you're with some of the greats.
I don't think, again, this is like, I don't mean to sound so mild. You know me to speak plainly and concisely, but I don't think so. I think most of it is flirting with something artistic, flirting with something that people are curious about, flirting with something that is controversial and will get clicks and views and yeah. rile people up and set a bit of a fire, pun intended, I guess. but I don't think it's satanic in the way that some, you know, 20 post Twitter or X thread, whatever, would insinuate that it is, with a breakdown of who's doing this and that. That said, here's the clarity I'll bring, and I'll tie this, Scott, into Diddy. I'm pointing at you because the video's recently yeah. just into yeah. the mess.
I'm not Diddy's friend or anything.
I think, no, of course, he's just posted about, he uncovered some Diddy drama not long ago.
Keep so me it's out a of this, private dude, conversation.
Yeah, sorry. Your buddy Diddy.
Yeah. Your homie, that dude you party with all the time.
So I don't think...
Don't you get him something? Like, aren't you delivering something to his place?
Yeah. I wouldn't say, and again, this isn't premeditated, so I wish I had some kind of prepped answer for you, because it's a fun conversation, honestly. So the short answer is no. I think most of it is flirting and like just toying with it. And I don't think it is in this calculated conspiracy theory way that people assert that it is. That said, and is this maybe tainted or is there like some view that comes from my Christian upbringing and the fact that I'm a Christian, maybe, but the reason I'm saying that is to say, I don't mean this to come from a spiritual angle. I do think that it's a really dirty industry. And I do think, Christian or not, which you're asking me, you set it up with context for my yep. dad being a pastor mm-hmm. and me being a Christian. So I'm answering with that angle only because you already pulled that in.
Yep.
I think anyone would say this. And that's why I'm pointing at Will's buddy Diddy here. I do think it is unarguable to like almost zoom out and see the aerial view, like zoom away from conspiracy theory or like mm-hmm. us or anyone arguing it is or isn't, or just zoom out. I just think objectively, practically, almost inarguably, it is a very dirty industry, which comes from humanity, comes from people being insecure and looking for something. It comes from the depravity of man, however you want to put it. I do think that it's a dirty industry, and there's a lot of sickness in it. And is that calculated? Is that like this committed relationship to Satan himself? I don't think so, but I do think there are a lot of people out here doing dirty, messy, harmful things to humanity. That's why I pulled Christianity back into it, is because to me, ironically, not to do a disservice to Christianity either, but I don't know that there's, I don't think I could make a more liberal point either. Meaning, I don't think anyone, who would disagree with the depravity of Diddy and all that's going on? Do you understand what I'm saying? So I think it is a sick, dirty industry at times. I think that's true for most of the world and a lot of industries because people are just sick and dirty and we're all trying our best. But
that's actually something I was just going to go to, is like, all right, we talk about, you know, we talk about, you know, the music industry and how I would say personally, from my own point of view, now everybody, you know, should know before I say this, I grew up Catholic. I went to Catholic school, you know, like I grew up in religion, you know, like my mom's a, you know, like 3-time-a-week church goer. Like, and I am obviously, as everybody could probably guess, not very religious, but to point all this out, like to say, I would say that, the horrible shit that we look at for Diddy can be found in every single major like money making industry that exists.
Sure.
And not to say, you know, like Kenneth Copeland or Joel Osteen, who are running mega churches and like exploiting the tithing of their flocks to literally have jets and like, now not to accuse them of, you know, sexual impropriety, but there is, even inside the church, you look at like specifically the Catholic side of things, you know, it's like all of Ireland has thousands of horrible like murder and sex abuse scandals. Like in America, even there is so much like, you know, you get into like the weird like Catholic pedophilia scandals that go on, and like how they just move a priest from church to church if he has some sort of impropriety or something that he's done wrong. Every time anybody gets power of any type over a group of people, they have an equal amount of chance of becoming the worst human being possible.
Sure.
As they do becoming the best human being possible. You know?
It's pervasive in almost any industry.
It absolutely, you know, it's like that absolute power corrupts absolutely thing. It's like it can 100% be that in any way, shape, or form in any industry. I don't think that the music industry or the film industry or any of the Hollywood stuff that you talk about being satanic or evil or bad or any, I don't think it has any more of that than any other money-making industry that exists in this. You go to Wall Street, those guys are doing more drugs than rock stars, you know? Like, I have a good friend who graduated the same year as me from high school, went off to a really good college, went back to New York, became a, you know, became worked on Wall Street and is like working in an investment firm and stuff. And that guy does more drugs than I do. And I do the most drugs in the music industry. You know, it's like, there is like no, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter where you go. Anytime that there is money or power involved, people become, you know, corrupted by that power.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
More it's more visible because we're in entertainment.
Right, and the cameras are on us because no one's following around Drew on Wall Street with his, you know, with his job on Wall Street.
Sure, his fleece vest.
You know, like watching everything he does. And
his
like
Patagonia
and
jacket.
Exactly, yeah, that's exactly. Just less conspicuous. Yeah. I'll add though, and I can't help but like preach at it for a second. The difference is that it's a choice to promote it.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And I'm not, this again, this is not with some religious angle, but what I will say is if you just are a person who's pursuing happiness and the happiness of those around you, which is just the ultimate thing in life, to me, and this, I will point a finger at anyone in the industry, even, you know, just think of any viral video you've seen of Lil Nas or whatever, someone toying with it. It's just not very elevated. To me, it's like if you're choosing to partner with something, there's just nothing more powerful than love and hope and peace. And for me, that isn't exemplified better by anyone than Jesus. But you can, I won't remove that. You can, the listener, you can remove that if you want. It's just, it doesn't get any better and any more powerful. And if you disagree, I'm teaching you something. There isn't, you can just listen. It doesn't get any better or more powerful than those things. And so choosing as your thing to be darkness or pain or the devil, it just can get better than that. To me, it's just like it's a lesser than choice that is perceived as powerful. I'm not obtuse. I understand mostly what they want is people to respond with this conspiracy theory. They're giving that conservative dad in Kentucky who's like, it's a it's satanic. That's exactly what they want. You're playing right into the hand.
Are just as 100%. Important as the
so I get
clicks.
That a lot of it is just, it truly isn't even with the depth, but that's the main thing I would say to those people is it's like, God, you could do so much better. There's real power in love and like bringing people into the light. Whatever you perceive that is, that's so much better than.
And just to be that corollary on that same thing, like, I'm literally Greasy Will. I have embraced every negative aspect about myself and been perfectly fine with it as a human being. And I still agree with Shane, like inside the industry, people who have worked with me, my friends who have come up through it, like they all know, there's probably somebody watching this that's like, yeah, right. But they all know that I am actually one of the nicest people that you could possibly. I believe the same thing. Like, you should be kind to people. You should treat people with respect. I just also don't treat myself with respect most of the time. But like, I truly believe that same thing. I think that, and I'm out to prove that the end state of this whole career that I'm doing, I've chosen the free gigs or the no money gigs or whatever over over working with people who are mean. I have chosen to help people out and do, you know, even now my policy is if you hit me up to mix and you're on a label and the label is paying that, fine, $3,000, that's my number. But if you are an indie artist and you reach out to me and you're like, yeah, that's, I know that. I know that if I had to pay $3,000 to have my song mix, I could never do that even where I'm at now. I couldn't do that. That would be
ironic. Sometimes I'm like, I don't think I could afford my rates.
I couldn't afford me, you know? But when an indie artist reaches out to me and they say, hey, like, this is what I can afford, I almost always take it. And if it is just such a low number that I can't, I will find somebody that I respect that I think is very good and that will do it for that number. And I will put you in touch with them so that you can still get a good quality mix from somebody without having to, you know, mortgage the house and sell one of your kidneys, you know? So I thoroughly believe that kindness and goodness in people, and I don't have any of the religion side to me, but I do think that that is what you're supposed to be doing. That's what you're supposed to be using your power for. That's what you're supposed to be doing in this industry. That's what you're supposed to be doing in every industry. And it may not be what capitalism rewards a lot of the time, but it is what my soul feels good at the end of the day, knowing like I did the best I could and I helped as many people as I could and I did positive things for the world, because that's all that you leave behind. You know, it's like nobody is gonna give a shit about you if you were the meanest person in the world. They're just gonna look at it and be like, cool, like glad he's gone. But if you have done some kindness to people, people will remember that mm-hmm. most of the time. And it's worth it to get burned a few times. It's worth it to have some negative, response, because truthfully, we know it. It's like, if you are kind, you can be taken advantage of easier. You know, it is easier to get. I have absolutely mixed a song on the cheap for somebody and then seen them Instagramming about flying on the private jet and been like, damn, like you got me. Like you got me. All right, fine. But, you know, I'm not going to. Shane says this. You're never going to regret being kind. You know, you're never going to look back and say, like, oh, I shouldn't have been nice to that person, you know, but you will look back and be like, oh, I shouldn't have been horrible to that person. So
that's amazing. I honestly think
I hope you keep that.
Yeah, I think that was a great end to this episode.
You know what? Also, one other thing I'll say, you know, what's the only thing cheesier than worshiping Satan is pretending to worship Satan. You put that outfit on and you took that picture for IG. Yeah. That's so cheat. Just
real.
Worship him. My
for
God.
Real. Just like get.
So I'm almost being serious.
Do the blood sacrifice.
Like, it's almost worse.
Do the orgies.
The
like,
industry is pretend. Like just do it already then. Quit messing around.
Legit, if you are going to worship Satan, there's some cool stuff that you could get into to really like get on with it. Like
you made that. You had someone make that outfit for that video. Like, and you're not even doing it.
Yeah.
That's Jesus.
Legit, you know what I mean? Though, just so you guys know, I'm just kind of on this. But the whole Church of Satan thing is actually really rad.
I won't say much, but it freaking is actually.
It is really rad. Like, their big thing is just actually fighting against, like, you know, like.
Yeah, there's an irony.
Yeah, it's like their whole thing is to recently they put, like, the Baphomet statue in, like, the courthouse or whatever. But it was because, like, you know, they were going so hard on this. Everybody has to be the one religion, the one thing, the one. And it's just disrespectful to all the thousands of religions that exist out there that have different. So they're actually fighting for all religions by doing this.
I'm not going to sit here and defend them with you as a Christian, but I've heard the same thing. They're effectively just advocates for
they're just advocates for just actually
ironically not say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, we can move on.
Yeah, but we're down with Satan. If
we're
you're
going on
get
a crazy
real.
Tangent. We're going on a crazy tangent. I'm going to stop. All right. I do believe in separation of church and state. Let's leave it at that. on that note, I think that was a really good way. Like, be kind. You'll never regret being kind, Shane. Thank you, Greasy Will. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Let's do the shout outs. Thank you so much. Shane and Will, first off, what are your handles?
W Shane Lance on whatever.
Yeah, I'm Greasy Will on everything with a Z, Greazy, and one L. I don't spell my name with two L's because that second one, I don't like to take extra L's. And also, it wasn't getting me anything, you know? It wasn't doing anything that the first one wasn't. So I just cut it out of my life. Yeah, the only thing that I'm not just Greasy Will at is TikTok, which is Greasy Will Music. Yeah, I know, it's stupid.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's Greasy Will Music. Somebody had Greasy Will spelled the exact same way.
Really?
Yeah, and I was so pressed because it was like,
dude, this moment, because for as long as we've been friends, especially via the internet, this is like not knowing your best friend's phone number.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I couldn't type in his phone number. I would never have known that that wasn't
but if,
your
if
handle.
If you start getting greasy, Will, it'll get you there. It's like the other one's not even a real account. It just has like 3 followers and it's just like a dead like account.
One day they're going to wake up like, what the?
Yeah, they're going to get tagged in like 7 million things. They're like, what is going on? But yeah, everything is greasy Will for me. So nice. Except for TikTok, greasy Will.
And right now you are... Remind me, are you in the middle of season 2 or you've finished season 2?
We finished season 2, technically. We are calling them seasons, but they're really just so that we have an excuse to stop doing it for like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
and also so we can do a live. We do 10 episodes and every 10th episode is a live episode where we take questions from the fans and stuff. So
which I was there at. That was actually very fun, very well put together at Eat
It was a blast. Thanks for coming out, man. I know this isn't our pod, which is why we are letting you shout us out, but we appreciate you guys so much.
Yeah,
DK
absolutely.
And Lou. This is so fun. Appreciate you having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. So go ahead and go check out the That Sounds About Right podcast. If you like this conversation, there's many, many more, a couple dozen more on their podcast, and I'm sure it gets just as crazy, just as rowdy, just as fun.
Equally unhinged.
Let's go. Let's go.
And I think I just remembered why I was calling Shane Chris.
Why?
You guys ever heard of the artist named Chris Willis?
He must be super handsome. I don't know.
He's a gospel singer, but he got really popular in EDM because he did I think it was like with Tiesto or somebody. He was one of the featured vocalists. And I think as I was talking to Shane and Will, for some reason, I'm thinking of Chris Willis. That's why I'm like, wait, what am I saying? Because before we even started this episode, I was calling you Shane.
Yeah, I know you. Will.
Somewhere
you know
in my brain,
okay.
I just lost
almost,
it. I'm
not offended at all. And in fact, I was going to harp on it some more, but we've taken up so much time bullshitting that I was going to give you my handles like,
just on a really, or on a really, on a really hilarious, like little side story. I did a session one time where the dude called me Will the entire session. And then literally like at midnight hit and he just started calling me Wes. And it took me too long to realize that he was talking to me because he'd been calling me Will forever, that it never processed. And then I realized after he'd done it like 8 times, I was like, oh, it's too late. I'm Wes now. Fuck it.
Yeah, honestly, that's happened to me before, but it's now a permanent name. There's a producer named Yanni out there. And Yanni's a super cool cat. He's very relaxed. He likes to do like weird pop-ins on people when you're in studio. But everybody at the time knew me as an old nickname that my best friend gave me back like when we finished high school and stuff, Legu. Which is just a joke on my name, but he never heard Legu. He always called me Lego. And like, at first I thought he was just, somebody was going to correct them or something and like be like, oh no, it's Legu. And like, eventually he'd get it. And it's been 12 years.
And I'm you're still Lego? Lego?
I'm still Lego. And I'm like, you know what? It's too late. Let's I'm Lego. Let's
That's
go.
So funny.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. Appreciate you leaving a 5-star review. And if you want more exclusive episodes, go to themixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive for $4 a month or $40 a year. You can unlock significantly more episodes, and the exclusive episodes are ad-free. So thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.